it wasn't long ago that kids with disabilities attended classes in a school building for children with disabilities. Now many of these students are in schools with non-disabled peers, but they remain in special education classrooms, separate and apart from classmates who are not disabled. The situation is changing, however, in what is no less than a schoolhouse revolution. This morning, we began a five-part series on educating children with disabilities. Room for All is produced by AM 580's Celeste Quinn.
Jim Waldrop has just turned 18. On this sunny late afternoon in May, he's about ready to head off for his senior prom. Waldrop and his date, Candy Wise, will go out to dinner, then to the dance. Afterwards, they'll go to a post-prom party at a bowling alley.
You look very pretty.
Thank you.
So is this your first prom?
This is my second.
Wise is wearing a turquoise dress. Her date's in a tuxedo. His tie and cummerbund match the color of her dress. Typical prom night. But this couple is not typical of the kids who are going to the prom tonight. Jim Waldrop has cerebral palsy. He's in a wheelchair. His hands and feet are crippled. He communicates by using what's called a touch talker. For the occasion tonight, he's programmed into the touch talker what he'd like to order at the restaurant. Asked what he'll select, Waldrop leans his head back and smiles broadly. You can hear the sound of his smile.
I would like lasagna, please. I would like the pasta side dish and soup, please.
Waldrop requires assistance to do things most of us take for granted. He needs help dressing and getting to the bathroom. His parents must turn him at night while he's sleeping. But Waldrop is also very much like everyone else. He's a typical teenager who needs friends. He likes girls, soft drinks, and music. We ask the couple what they'd like to dance to tonight. Wise is fond of rap star Hammer. With a little prompting from his mother, Brenda Page, Waldrop reveals he's more of a romantic.
You always like a song that's about love.
Ah! Love.
Love.
To assist Waldrop tonight, two adult aides will accompany the couple. They are also dressed for the dance. Because the prom's location is less than accessible, Waldrop won't be able to use his motorized chair. Tonight he's in a manual wheelchair. So to dance, someone will have to push him around the floor.
He's all excited about that.
Candy, you
want
to go over there and stand by him and we'll take a picture?
Yeah.
Put the light on here. There we go. We'll take a couple here.
The picture's snapped. Waldrop and Wise are ready to go. Someone says, "Don't wait up for us," and everyone laughs.
Well, you two have fun, Candy. Jim?
Good, buddy. Have fun.
Be careful with your chair and all this other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Let's take him back out, okay? There's plenty of room.
Getting their son ready for the evening involved some effort on the part of his parents. Waldrop can't drive. He needed some help at the store where they rented the tux. He'll need some help throughout the evening to dance, to bowl, to get to the restroom. But Waldrop doesn't seem to be bothered by getting past the barriers. Brenda Page and her husband, Roger.
I guess that's kind of the way he's always grown up. There's usually the adults around to help. I know it really tickles him when he can go places without mom and dad, but he knows he needs that other support. It would tickle him even more probably if it could just be peers, if he could just go there and know that there'd be some kids available. That's kind of just me speaking from what I'm interpreting, so I don't know exactly what's going on in his head. You know, it's hard to say. You know.
Anybody come up to him and help him with something, and he, you know, he'd love it, you know. Yeah. Didn't make a difference who it was.
Yeah, it's an interaction. It's a chance for an interaction.
The dance was one of the highlights of Jim Waldrop's senior year at Champaign's Centennial High School. But it was a big year for Waldrop.
What did you like best about being a senior this year, Jim?
Being in regular classes, Mr. Powers helped me get pop.
For the first time in his entire school career, Waldrop was in general education classes the entire day. In years past, he spent all, or a good portion of, his school day in a special ed classroom or in vocational training. Mr. Powers is Dan Powers. Sometimes Waldrop and Powers would share a soft drink after school while Jim waited for a taxi to go home.
He and I have developed a little friendship, and it's been kind of interesting that he'll, you know, program things into his touch talker at night to tell me the next day that when he went to prom, for instance, and he told me about that, and the birthday parties, that sort of thing. You know, make sure to have that programmed in so he can let me know the next day.
Dan Powers was a science teacher at Centennial. Powers says having Waldrop in class last year was a good experience for him, the other students, and he believes for Waldrop.
I think one of the things that I've seen is that he's more comfortable with the other students. I think he knows that the kids are uneasy with him. And the longer he's there, the more he just becomes a regular fixture in the class, just like anybody else. And I think he's more comfortable now that they're more comfortable.
Educators call this experience inclusion. Inclusion can be thought of as a new kind of integration, but it is more than moving kids with disabilities into classrooms with peers who are not disabled. It really means including these children. People who support inclusion believe that all children need acceptance, need friends, a sense that they belong, that they are part of the larger community. It's a concept that's relatively new, and it's seen as revolutionary by many special and general education teachers, as well as many parents of children with disabilities. Not so long ago, many disabled students in Illinois were educated in buildings where all the kids were handicapped. Slowly, school buildings have become integrated, but by and large, special ed students in this state remain segregated in special education classrooms. Waldrop's mother, Brenda Page, became interested in inclusion 4 or 5 years ago. She decided integrated buildings weren't enough. Last year, she decided full inclusion was right for her son. Page always thought he would grow more by learning alongside classmates without disabilities.
But I guess I had bought into the belief that we needed to work on this functional stuff because he's going to live on his own or with support. He's going to do all these things. But if he doesn't have any friends that he's made along the way, what good is it to be able to do all this stuff if you don't have any connections, if you don't have anyone to talk to, if you don't have friends? I don't know, it's a real lonely existence. To me, the friends are priority above everything else, any type of skill or anything. That's our lifeline, I think, just as people, you know. And kids with disabilities, they've not recognized that that's important to them, too, I think, for the most part.
Looking back over the experience of her son's senior year, Paige says overall things went well. On the night of his graduation, she was concerned that he might have some difficulty maneuvering his wheelchair during the ceremony. There was no problem. And Brenda Page was pleasantly surprised when the students in her son's class gave him a warm round of applause when it was his turn to pick up a diploma. That sign of recognition meant that some of her son's peers knew him and liked him. I'm Celeste Quinn.
A revolution is underway in Illinois schools. The philosophy that has guided the education of children with disabilities is being challenged. The revolution is known as inclusive schooling. Inclusion can be thought of as a new kind of integration. People who support inclusion believe all children need acceptance, need friends, a sense that they are part of the larger community. AM 580's Celeste Quinn has the second in our series, Room for All, Educating Kids with Disabilities.
Jim Waldrop graduated from high school last June. During the graduation ceremony, when he picked up his diploma, he received a warm round of applause from some of his classmates. If it hadn't been for the experiences he had his senior year, that might not have happened. That's because the students who graduated with Jim Waldrop might not have known him. Waldrop spent his senior year at Champaign Centennial High School in general education classes. His schooling prior to that point was almost entirely in special education classrooms and in community and vocational training. Waldrop has cerebral palsy, and his disabilities are severe. This disorder of the central nervous system has affected his ability to move his hands and feet, and it confines him to a wheelchair. The effect on his speech causes him to rely on a computerized device called a touch talker. I asked Waldrop if he liked being in classes with students most of us call the regular kids, or if he preferred the days when he was in a special education classroom.
It's better to be with all kinds of kids. People understand me better.
My name's Matt Miller. I'm a junior here at Centennial, and I think it's good that they're starting to work them into starting to work the special ed people into regular classes because they need to be worked into society, and it's a good start.
Miller was one of the students in Waldrop's biology class last year. So was Michelle Zook. She was a freshman.
I mean, I'm used to working with people like that. I've got a cousin who's deaf, so it's not that weird. It's kind of, I'm just glad to see that they're finally starting something with the handicapped kids in regular classes instead of shoving them off by themselves in a different class.
The kids who were in this class seemed to accept Waldrop and his disabilities. Some of them came to appreciate his abilities. But teens and adults who have not known a person with disabilities can find it difficult to relate to someone like Jim Waldrop. It's easier when people without disabilities get to know people with disabilities at a young age.
It takes a little getting used to. I don't think anybody can really deny that if someone has not been exposed to someone like Jim.
Waldrop needed an aide in school. During his senior year, that person was Jim Dwyer.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what to expect. Like I said earlier, I've never worked with or even interacted with anybody like Jim before. So I didn't know what to expect. I was a little ashamed to admit that I was actually kind of surprised at how easily we became friends and how easily we got along.
Dwyer says Waldrop's academic abilities varied from class to class. He says Waldrop performed at an elementary grade level. Dwyer helped Waldrop to get to his classes, take notes, study for tests, and take the tests. Dan Powers was Waldrop's biology teacher.
I haven't modified the goals a great deal for Jim. One of the problems is that it's very, very difficult for him to answer subjective questions on an exam.
So the tests were modified to true-false and multiple-choice formats for Waldrop. There was no change for the other kids. Powers says he thinks the experience was good for everyone, himself, Waldrop, other students. But he did wonder if Waldrop was getting the best.
Regardless of how I may or may not change the goals, I feel that he's not getting the same level of experience that the other kids are getting. But I'm confident that he's getting a great deal anyway. Just because I can't test him on it doesn't mean he's not getting it. And his mother has a little better feel for that than I do, and we've talked about it, and she thinks he's learned quite a bit of biology.
A special education teacher who knows Waldrop was pleased with his experiences as a senior. Barb Mammon says when students leave the special education classroom for some portion of their day, they gain a sense of context. For example, they understand that when the bell rings, it's time to go to the next class. The students realize they can manage their time. Mammon calls Waldrop's senior year an experiment for Centennial.
I think in Jim's case, we didn't know what to expect, what he could do on a test, how he was going to do an objective test. And I think he pleasantly surprised a lot of people. Yeah, he was able to remember, he was able to understand, he was able to get subtleties in the class and some puns, and I think that's kind of, you know, just refreshing to know that happened.
Waldrop's mother sees the subject matter her son has learned as just one piece of his education. More important to her that her son have friends. Brenda Page says the people who knew her son in school will know him in the community. She used to think the segregated classroom would give her son the functional skills he needs to survive.
But if he doesn't have any friends that he's made along the way, what good is it to be able to do all this stuff if you don't have any connections, if you don't have anyone to talk to, if you don't have friends? I don't know, it's a real lonely existence. So to me, the friends are priority above everything else, any type of skill or anything. That's our lifeline, I think, just as people, you know, and he... Kids with disabilities, they've not recognized that that's important to them, too, I think, for the most part.
Page says overall her son's senior year went well, but the feeling of being included, a part of the community, by and large ended when her son left the school building. That despite his participation in extracurricular activities.
Okay, this sauce here is a ginger sauce.
This was the last outing for the year for Centennial's International Club. It's a diverse group of students interested in learning about other cultures. They met at a restaurant specializing in Japanese cuisine. Waldrop was a member while he was still in the special education classroom. This was his third year in the club. Sarah Gelberg spent the same amount of time as a member. I asked her if the support Waldrop needs had caused problems.
It's just something we do. It's not a big inconvenience.
My name is Shinma.
It doesn't really hinder the club.
Does it help?
I think it helps. I think it helps us learn how to communicate with other people, especially like if people are, you know, we're talking about learning in different languages, I guess you could say it's another kind of language you have to learn.
From attending this one outing, it's difficult to say if Waldrop was really one of the gang. One student appeared uncomfortable sitting near Waldrop in the restaurant, and there wasn't a lot of interaction between Waldrop and the other club members. But everyone I asked said, Jim is great. This outing was going to be the club's last meeting of the year, but there was one more meeting. No one told Waldrop. It might have been a simple oversight, but Brenda Page wonders if it meant her son was not quite one of the gang. She thinks if her son had been in classrooms with the regular kids all along from kindergarten on, she probably wouldn't have asked the question. I'm Celeste Quinn.
Figures from the U.S. Department of Education show that children with disabilities are more likely to be in private special schools in Illinois than disabled peers in 43 states. And Illinois kids attending public schools are more likely to be in self-contained special ed classrooms than children with disabilities in 46 states. But Illinois is beginning to change. Here, with the third report in her series Room for All, Educating Kids with Disabilities, AM 580's Celeste Quinn.
Not long ago, kids with physical disabilities attended classes in a school building for children with physical disabilities. And children with mental disabilities went to school in a separate building for kids with mental disabilities.
There wouldn't be a word inclusion if we didn't have exclusion going on.
That's Margie Jobe, Director of Special Education for the Champaign Public Schools. Inclusion might be thought of as a new kind of integration, integrating or including children with disabilities with their peers, peers who are not disabled. Inclusion is a hot topic in special ed. In fact, it's a hot topic in the entire field of education.
It's the topic with directors of special ed. It's the topic with teacher unions. It's a topic with superintendents. And you get a sense of this because newsletters, you know, constantly flow in the field of education. And when you start seeing the word inclusion, not only in special ed documents, but documents that our superintendent would get, documents that our personnel director gets related to the union issues, you know, documents from a variety of probably professional, what I would call professional groups, you know that it's out there and people are trying to define it and deal with it and probably come to terms with it.
As with just about any hot topic, inclusion is controversial. Proponents cast the issue in terms of the civil rights movement, using the words segregation and integration. They point to research showing inclusion benefits the disabled and non-disabled. Meanwhile, the opposition is concerned about a rapid, radical change in special education. Opponents say the movement could lead school districts to dump disabled children into classrooms ill-equipped to meet their needs. To understand the issues, some background might help. To begin, all children are entitled to an education. It's a right guaranteed by federal and state laws. Remember the landmark civil rights case, Brown versus Board of Education? In that 1954 case, the U.S. Supreme Court said separate is not equal, and the justices ordered an end to racial segregation in schools. Later, that ruling was used in a case brought by the Pennsylvania Association for Retarded Citizens. The Pennsylvania decision was a catalyst for other court decisions, as well as federal and state laws requiring that all children, regardless of disability, receive a free and appropriate education in the least restrictive environment. Many educators say the least restrictive environment for children with disabilities is a building or special classroom devoted to those students. But that thinking is changing. Again, Champaign's Director of Special Education, Margie Jobe.
For a long time, we thought that was the best method for teaching. Not that anybody said segregate them is the best method, but get them in small groups, which meant small classes. And so by doing that, you were segregating students. I don't think people were saying, well, let's segregate this group. I think they were saying the instruction we can provide with a class of 8 students, with a teacher, with an aide, is really going to benefit that child.
Liz Witten has extensive experience in special education. She has been a classroom teacher and an administrator. She is currently an assistant professor in the Department of Special Education at the University of Illinois.
Kids that, especially kids with learning disabilities and kids that have learning problems in general, have a tendency not to be able to take those skills and transfer them back to the general education setting or into the community or any other setting. So that's something that we have to make sure happens, and the best way to do that is to get kids to use those skills in the setting in which is most appropriate. So why do we pull kids out of the setting, the general ed setting, and the kids that we pull out have the most trouble generalizing back in? It seems like we're making life even more difficult for them than it already is with a learning problem.
But pullouts, self-contained classrooms, and private facilities for children with disabilities are not always restrictive. Sometimes these settings are the least restrictive environment. It's dismissal time at Lawrence Hall Youth Services in Chicago. A group of high school students joke with one another and Pam Barnett, a school administrator.
Hi, how's everybody today?
Is that on me?
Huh? No, it's the whole world does not revolve around you, believe me. Justin's been winning all these art competitions, so he thinks you're out here to interview him. We went to the mayor's office yesterday for a photo session.
The school offers a residential program for wards of the state and a day program for children who live at home with parents. The classrooms here are very small, and students receive a lot of individual attention. The residential cottages are located right outside the school doors. Lawrence Hall is a private school for children who are emotionally disturbed, ED, or behavior disordered, BD. The ED children are clinically mentally ill. Many of the BD students have been neglected or abused. They're angry and act out. But the atmosphere here this summer afternoon is very peaceful. Pam Barnett is the school's director of education.
You walk through the hallways oftentimes and you don't see their handicapping conditions. So you say, well, of course they can be in the regular setting.
Barnett says the children attending Lawrence Hall need a place separate from the public schools. She says Lawrence Hall offers them the opportunity to succeed academically and in relationships with others. The school's classes are small. Staff therapists work with students and their families. Barnett says the average student is at the school for 2 years. She believes returning these children to the public school too soon and without support for their transition can be disastrous.
Many of these kids just cannot survive in a larger system. They cannot. They will either start running with the gangs and gain that criminal sort of headset, or they will withdraw. Those are the really lost children, in my opinion, because they don't cause any trouble, and they'll just sit and vegetate through their school experience.
Barnett says the current fervor for inclusion could destroy facilities like Lawrence Hall. She says some inclusion proponents are zealots, and she fears the movement will become cost-driven, not child-focused.
There are many parents, by the way, that are strong proponents of schools such as ours and are in favor of our schools. We have success stories here and a long list of parents that would come in and testify as to how their children would be dead today if it weren't for the intervention of these sorts of services.
Barnett says she supports the concept of inclusion. She admits the system has been too ready to move children with disabilities into separate facilities.
In an ideal world, all children should be together, certainly. Certainly right now, today, the physically handicapped children should be completely mainstreamed as we speak. The mentally retarded children are the next in line that can be mainstreamed, particularly the EMH kids, the kids that are not as profoundly retarded. The profoundly retarded and behavior disordered population simply cannot be mainstreamed today or perhaps in the next 5 years because I do not see the services in place for them.
Support for children and teachers is a big concern. Also of concern, how many options and what kind of options should be afforded to kids with disabilities? And as always in education, there's the matter of money. Critics charge the inclusion movement is popular in part because it could save districts money during tight economic times. But some who support the idea say it may cost school districts money to bring children with disabilities into the regular classroom setting. Others say money saved on transportation and private school tuition could be used for additional teachers, teacher training, and classroom aides. I'm Celeste Quinn.
School is back in session following the summer break. You may drive past the school in your neighborhood and not notice anything different this fall. Children scrambling off buses to get to class or kids romping around the playground during recess. But change is afoot in many Illinois schoolhouses. Children with disabilities are taking seats next to classmates without disabilities. AM 580's Celeste Quinn prepared the fourth report in our series, Room for All, Educating Children with Disabilities.
I am the parent of a daughter with Down syndrome, and she's 8 years old. And in 8 short years, I have learned that she is truly more disabled by society's perceptions of her than she is by an extra chromosome in her body. It's because of the way people react and interact with her because they have a certain amount of ignorance.
Sandy Hines is passionate about changing the way her daughter, Abby, and other children with disabilities are educated. The Bloomington woman wants to see children with disabilities in their neighborhood schools with kids who are the same age and who are not disabled. Hines is one of a growing number of people who are pushing for change in the field of special education. As a parent, she's advocating for her daughter, and her job involves children with disabilities. She works for Project Choices, a state-funded program geared to help local school districts move toward inclusion. Inclusion is not just another educational initiative. Hines and others who support inclusion are passionate in their dedication to the cause. They are seeking no less than a revolution in the educational system, but they are challenged by parents, teachers, and administrators who believe with equal passion that students with disabilities benefit from small, segregated classrooms or private, special schools. There are fears inclusion will cost a great deal of money and local districts won't get the support they need. Meantime, private schools receiving public monies to serve the disabled fear they'll be forced to close their doors, and they say the effort is not to get kids into the least restrictive environment, but to get them into the least expensive environment. They say kids will be dumped into classrooms ill-equipped to support their needs. Years ago, many children with disabilities were not in school. You'd find them in programs in church basements or at home with their parents. In 1969, Illinois recognized the problem and began requiring school districts to provide educational programs for children with disabilities. Children living in districts without special facilities or programs were bused to districts with them. Ruth Usselton works for Project Choices.
And it's very interesting that that is our pride and now it's our burden, because we have a larger commitment in this state than many other states have to basically brick and mortar, to buildings that we have developed based on our desire to provide what was then a state-of-the-art practice for kids with disabilities.
Illinois is one of the most segregated states in the nation. Figures from the U.S. Department of Education show children with disabilities are more likely to be in private special schools in Illinois than their peers in 43 states. And Illinois kids attending public schools are more likely to be in self-contained special ed classrooms than kids with disabilities in 46 states.
We tend to say, you have this IQ, you have this deficit, so you belong in this program.
Ann Robinson works for an advocacy group for the disabled, the Chicago-based Designs for Change. She says the system fails children by sorting them into available slots and available programs. By law, each child identified with a disability is to have an individualized education program, or IEP, and be schooled in the least restrictive environment. Again, Ann Robinson.
For example, the first thing we need to do after we've written goals and objectives is decide, can we serve this child in a regular classroom? If we modify the curriculum, if we add some adaptations, if we maybe provide an aid for a child, maybe we want to use computers or other forms of technology. We need to first address that issue before we decide to bus that child to any other program that we've already set up. So therefore, serving one child in the classroom with non-disabled kids 100% of the time may be least restrictive for that child. We may have another child who least restrictive means spending half day in a regular ed classroom. And for another child, least restrictive may be a private segregated facility.
Designs for Change believes the system has failed to go through this process. Attorneys for the group and the Northwestern University Legal Clinic have filed a class action lawsuit over the issue. The suit alleges that the Chicago Board of Education and the State Board of Education are not getting kids with disabilities into the least restrictive environment. Other participants in this schoolhouse revolution, though, worry the system may move too quickly. Liz Witten teaches in the Department of Special Education at the University of Illinois. She supports inclusion, but she's afraid that regular ed teachers won't get the training and planning time needed to make the experience a good one for everyone in the classroom. That, she says, could lead schools to fail their students. Witten says she has seen some backlash from teachers and the parents of non-disabled children.
I would feel just as uncomfortable if I had one of my children in a classroom of 25 kids and we were going to include three or four kids with disabilities and no one was going to support that general educator. You bet I'd be there. I'd be there complaining just as much because I know what it'd be like to be that general educator. It's tough enough with 25 kids that are considered to be in that realm of normalcy, let alone bring in kids with disabilities. You need support.
We should mention that preliminary studies have been conducted regarding the impact students with disabilities have on the academic progress of classmates without disabilities. Four studies of programs in four states show no significant differences in scores on standardized tests between students in inclusive and control classrooms. However, researchers are calling for additional studies, including an examination of how inclusion may benefit non-disabled children. Support for teachers and for students with disabilities making the transition to classes with non-disabled peers is mentioned over and over by those who support and those who oppose inclusion. The director of education for a private school in Chicago doesn't believe the support is or will be available anytime soon in the public schools. Pam Barnett of Lawrence Hall Youth Services.
They may get there. And God bless if they do, but they aren't there today. So to pretend that they are and pull these kids out and shut down services or attempt to replicate or duplicate these programs and not do it as effectively is really bothersome to me, and I do see that happening.
But advocates like Designs for Change feel they must challenge the system.
There is always a risk that somehow there'll be some remedy that you didn't want. I suppose when you advocate for anything, that's a possibility.
Sharon Weitzman of Designs for Change is one of the attorneys involved in the lawsuit against the Chicago and State Boards of Education. She says you can't make the system function properly by, quote, hiding out.
What we would hope to see happen is that inappropriate restrictive kinds of educational settings would disappear because there's no educational justification. On the other hand, there will always be, from my point of view, a need for extremely restrictive types of settings in order to serve certain children at certain points in their educational career that can be educationally justified.
Meanwhile, some school districts in Illinois are moving toward integration. The Chicago school system says within 3 to 5 years, its schools will be able to serve kids with mild to moderate disabilities in their neighborhoods. DeKalb schools are mentioned by Designs for Change as a model for other districts. 5 of Champaign's 15 schools, including both high schools, are now enrolling disabled students. And Danville has closed its facility for the disabled. The high school there has taken its first steps to integrate students. I'm Celeste Quinn.
In our series, Room for All, Educating Kids with Disabilities, we've heard about inclusion. Inclusion might be thought of as a new kind of integration, but it's more than moving kids with disabilities into classrooms with peers who are not disabled. People who support inclusion believe that all children need acceptance, need friends, a sense that they belong, that they are part of a larger community. Inclusion is a philosophy that is changing education, but many educators who believe inclusion is good for children are struggling with how to make it happen. This morning in the final report of Room for All, AM 580's Celeste Quinn visits a school working toward inclusion.
This is a physical education class at Danville High School. The students are playing a game of softball.
Good job.
Team members shout encouragement to one another when they step up to bat, make a hit, or get on base. Of course, baseball is a team effort, but here it's critical. Without it, some of the players couldn't play. They're in wheelchairs and they need help holding the bat. Jim Grabowski is a special education teacher. He team teaches this class with a general education teacher.
Well, they will bat, okay, and their batting will be full physical assistance, okay. We'll hold the bat in their hand, and the pitcher will come a little closer and try to toss it right towards the bat.
Grabowski and the class co-teacher have made some changes in the curriculum to allow each student to perform to the best of her or his ability. So the goals for a student with a lot of athletic ability differ from the goals for a student who has some physical or mental disability.
As far as fielding, you know, that's an area where we don't really put a lot of importance on, okay? The student will be in the outfield with everybody else, and, you know, that just comes to, you come to a point where you have to decide what's more important, you know, actually fielding, you know, or you know, at least being out there with the students, okay? Because, I mean, that's another issue where some people will say, you know, they're in the outfield, but they're not doing anything, you know? What good is going on? And, you know, I think you have to lay importance on proximity to regular ed kids. You know, you try to do the best you can and get them involved as much as possible.
Grabowski believes the special education students have a right to be here, participating in age-appropriate activities. He says in some schools, teenaged students with disabilities play games appropriate for children in kindergarten, games like Duck, Duck, Goose. Grabowski says that's neither good for special ed kids nor is it good for students in general ed. He says the benefits of an integrated setting extend beyond the experience of the disabled to the kids who are not disabled. Susie Michael is a junior this fall at Danville High.
Most kids will probably try to make fun of you or something, but these kids, they don't think about that stuff. They think about who you are inside of yourself, and that really makes a difference to people, I think.
Michael's taken a keen interest in her peers with disabilities. She thinks she may become a special education teacher as a result of her experiences at Danville High. With little encouragement from her teachers, Michael has become a natural support to the kids here with disabilities. What made you make the first move?
Oh, I don't know. I just love people. I love students. I love helping people, but I don't know. I just decided to help, and I guess it turned out for the best.
The story here at Danville High School isn't picture perfect. The philosophy of including kids with disabilities is new to the district. It recently closed a school building that had exclusively served kids with disabilities. That's the story across much of Illinois. The state's schools are among the most segregated in the nation. Here at Danville High, as in other Illinois school buildings, general education teachers are apprehensive about having students with disabilities in their classrooms. Efforts to include students have started in courses like PE, music, typing, and home economics.
I think we're treading water, is what I think we're doing. I think we've got a lot of room for improvement.
Jim Dowers is a general ed PE teacher. He says teachers like himself were pushed into the pool, and it was sink or swim.
One of the things that bothered me a lot in the very beginning was these kids were told to be in this situation, but there was no screening, really, for these kids to go into this. I don't think there was really very much preparation either, because a lot of them, you could tell, they were very lost in the beginning, and that's natural in a new situation. That's going to happen. We sat down and talked about a lot of things, how we could really meet the needs of these kids. And one of my basic concerns is, in a regular, traditional situation, it's very hard to meet the needs of these kids, because you have 35 students and you have this three or four other students who have very special needs, and it is very difficult to meet those needs when you have a curriculum that's set up not to meet those needs. And I think that's one of the things that I was most concerned with in the beginning. We have tried to adjust to that.
Dower's concerns are acknowledged by Principal Ellen Russell.
We did not prepare all of the PE teachers in advance for this and how to deal with a group of 30 or 40 students with some special needs students mixed into that group. And we found that out very soon. There were a lot of concerns, and it was mainly because the teachers were concerned that either the student would get hurt in the class, or that the student wasn't benefiting from the class. So it was a student-based concern.
And I think if we were to do it over again, we would have time before school starts to work with the people who would be involved rather than doing it immediately and hoping that they would work things out on their own. They really need time.
But Russell says she remains committed to integration.
When students get out into the workplace or they go to college, they're going to see students of all ability levels, all handicapping conditions. And if that's their first encounter with people who are different, they may not be able to handle it. And I think it's very healthy in the high school environment to have regular education students in the same classes with special needs students so that they learn that their hopes and their fears and their dreams and their thoughts are very much alike. And I think it helps a great deal on both sides.
In this series, Room for All, we've heard the voices of many people, kids, parents, teachers, administrators. All of them are concerned about education and what a good education means for a child's chance of leading a good life. No doubt these people will continue to struggle with the issues inclusion raises. But inclusion affects all of us. It's an everyone story. Sandy Hines is the parent of an 8-year-old daughter with Down's syndrome.
You know, Abby isn't always the receiver. She's not always there just learning from the other kids. They are indeed learning from her. And to see her contribute what she has to contribute by just being herself as a parent is what we all want. It's like, phew, it's going to be okay, you know. The kid's going to turn out all right. They're going to be a productive and welcomed and accepted and valued member of our society.
I'm Celeste Quinn.